Hi there, and welcome to The Conscious Communicator, a show dedicated to helping you find your true voice, the nonviolent voice of personal responsibility and purpose, the voice that only you can speak. The reason that most of us fail to achieve our true voice is because of the false voices that occupy the mind. The voices of ego, consumption, expectation, opinion, and self-doubt rob us of our true nature, our true voice. Join me as we have a chat about inner purpose, outer passion, and finding your true voice.
We are joined by Maya, who's going to talk to us a little bit about her path to conscious communication. First, I'd like to thank Kelly Lynn from last week, and I hope all of y'all will take the time to look up Kelly and her journey home, School of Ascension, if you found her as helpful and interesting as I did. Maya, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Well, thank you so much, Rusty, for having me today.
I got to be honest with you, I've been reading all of your stuff, and I've been a bit nervous. I read so much of what you've talked about, and for some reason, it's made, because there's so much, and it's something that I try and talk about a lot, and personal responsibility, and it's not going to be easy, and a lot of this
right.
stuff, but a lot of what you write about is the journey is kind of it's a powerful transformation. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. In my life, I was not drawn to spirituality or improving myself until I was 30 years old. And
mm-hmm.
that, for me, the way it worked was 30 years, I had nothing but pain in my life. A pretty abusive childhood, a pretty bad marriage, and God was waiting for me to, like, wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And at 30, something happened. There was a purpose. And not everybody comes to that point. Everyone will come to some parts of the point and might cross that path, fully go to the other side, and truly understand what their stuff is, clean themselves up, and wake up. That option is there in every lifetime. But for me, it was through life failing at every single point. 30 years, no love. That was the way the Creator said, Maya, you're going to come to me that way. And when I think about it in hindsight, Rusty, I don't believe that everything was meant to be that way and I could not have changed it, because I see how I'm creating my reality every moment. Free will
right.
is there. I had a chance. Even these last 8 years, from 30 to 38, as I'm deeply devoted to my path, my quest to finding out what is true within me, and seeing my stuff, my shadows, I know how much I procrastinate every day on things that are really difficult for me. So
yeah.
you have the option, but the good thing is no one is judging you. This is your path. And the more you do it, the more you work on your stuff and see it and release it, you remember that. So somehow that pulls you back. Every time you take a side step and go into the wilderness and get lost, something reminds you, no, Maya, we have a work to do. We are here for a purpose. We are here to clean up our act. We are here to evolve further, and we are here to help people as much as we can wherever we are. So my journey was all about failure. And when I was 30 years old, I started, I wanted to know who God was, because I was raised in a certain way, and I did not believe in that tradition, that religion, because it did not apply to me. Religion never applied to me at all. For some reason, I was just not happy with that. So for me, I'm an engineer, so I'm very logical, and I decided that I'm going to meet God one way or the other and ask God, why is it that my life was miserable? Why did you pick on me? Why is it that you were never there in my life for those 30 years? What went wrong? Was it a design flaw? You know, I had all kinds of questions that I wanted a direct answer, and that's how my path started.
You know, it sounds kind of, I don't know if you ever watched the movie Forrest Gump. Did you ever see that movie?
Yes.
You remember Lieutenant Dan, when he has his
yes.
moment at the top of the ship where he's basically just screaming at the universe
yes.
and saying, you need to show me something, and that's kind of where his when he starts to find some peace with himself is at that moment where he kind of just puts up his dukes and says, hey, I want to know what this is all about. And, you know, why haven't you been here or whatever? And it sounds to me, and even listening to you, that there really was some sense of, you know, I don't understand. I need to get some answers here. And, you know, it's really interesting to hear you talk about that. One of the questions that I had, you talk about faith, and can you describe your journey in the discovering of that faith? Because you said you went from, were you raised Hindu? Is that what you were?
Yes, my parents were here. They believed in Hinduism.
Okay.
And I was sent to a school, I was sent to a convent. In India, in those days, convents, they had better education than the public schools.
Right.
This is when I was growing up. And I was educated by nuns and, wonderful teachers. So I came to contact with everyone. Jesus was there in my school. So before going for the exams, I would just go quickly and just pray a little bit, but I never told anyone at home because they would be pretty upset with me. And then I would go to the temple and I would pray to the Indian gods. But that was, it was just my own way of connection, and all of us need that connection. I believe that everybody needs, in whatever way it is, whether it's religion or whether it is art, you need your connection to God in your own way. But it's only for me, at 30 years old, that connection was not true for me anymore. I was not ready to believe. I wanted something deeper. I wanted a direct experience. Usually enlightenment, that quest for enlightenment or trying to find out what is true in every moment of my life, it comes with wanting a direct experience. You're not ready to accept what someone else told you. You want it for yourself, and that there is nothing more powerful than a direct experience because it is self-validating. So, like, like you said, this man standing up in Forrest Gump and asking for, and, you know, yelling at God. I did that in my own way. I went hiking. I'm new. I've never been hiking in this country, and I didn't have proper hiking gears. I just decided to climb that mountain, without water. Ridiculous. I was furious. I was 3 hours into the hike, and I was dehydrated. There were lizards all over the path, and I'm scared of lizards. And I knew I was lost. I was dehydrated. I got scared. My mind was playing tricks. I was worried. I didn't have a cell phone or anything at that point. This was in California. And I was praying, oh, my gosh, how will even 9-11, I can't contact 9-11, and even if I faint, how will they come up here in this narrow path? And in my own way, I just was searching for something in my own way. That was my way. That is how it all started for me. And I sat down and I prayed. I said, okay, I can't hear you right now. But not that I could hear any time before, but just for conversation's sake. I can't hear you, Creator, beloved Father, saints, but help me. Give me water. I need water. And then I saw a couple of people coming down the mountain. I went up to them. I'm normally very shy. I don't interact with people. Those days I was really shy from India. And I would ask for water, and they would deny me that water. They would say no. And I could understand that because you're there and you want to save all the water you can for yourself instead of giving it to them. At that point I understood that, and my intuition started working. It told me you are not going to get water from another person because you need to trust and allow water to come to you. I kept asking people for water. When you're that, in that mountain, not a lot of people come down, and all of them refused to give me water. So then this old man came up the mountain, very old man with a huge backpack. And I didn't want to be rejected again because it was really sad for me to go through that. I was nervous, and I went up to him and asked him if I could walk with him up the hill because I wanted human company because my mind was playing tricks on me. I thought I'll faint and I will just be left out to die out there. And he said, okay, come. And I took a step and I couldn't walk. I didn't want to tell him anything. I just stood there and he looked at me and he asked me, do you want some water? And then at that point I was very nervous. I didn't want to take off his ration. So I asked him, can I just take a little sip so that I won't take all your stuff? Just give me a sip just to carry me a little while. And he said, you know what? My backpack is filled with bottles and bottles of drinking water, which I've been using as weight because I'm training on a hike, training for a hike, and I'm right here. I've reached my peak, and I'm ready to throw it off, and I'm glad I met you. For me, that was the first time in my life that I know of, Rusty, where I really had to surrender. I mean, even through the fear, I won't say that I said, oh, take care of me, Father, I'm all yours. I didn't do that. I was kicking and screaming all the while. But still, there was I was taken to a point where I had to learn that lesson. And from there on, it's like more than 8 years since then, from there on, it's been constant miracles in my life. I would be working and I would lose my job and all of a sudden money will show up out of nowhere. It's just beautiful and beautiful and beautiful. So for my journey towards discovering faith was me letting go of my arrogance that I can take care of everything myself and somewhere asking for help. It meant asking, going to a spiritual teacher for help, and being a humble student, and it was humility. That was the main thing, humility. Father, I know nothing, I'm open. For me, the beloved creator, I just address him Father. It can be divine mother, it can be the universal spirit, doesn't matter. For me, it's Father. So throughout all in my journey, in each of my spiritual evolution to the next stage, whether it was oneness or whether it was formlessness, everybody has these stages as you progress more and more. It is more and more enlightenment. That's the process. You are shown many things so that you have deeper insights. And as each deeper insights came, in the beginning I had a lot of arrogance because you get tremendous power. You have tremendous power when that comes. And I had a lot of arrogance. Oh, look at me. I'm so powerful. I'm better than you. I started judging all the teachers. And every time a lesson would be given to me where I would be brought to my knees because I was so I would resist teaching any kind of learning. And it was through love, devotion, and going to the Father every time, Father, I know nothing. I'm open. For me, that line is what always helped me, Rusty. Whether I'm in a jam, when during my oneness process, or any experience where my mind would come in and say, Maya, you're going to mess this up. You're not going to pass this. You're going to mess this up like everything else. When that message comes to me, the last thing I remember saying every time was, Father, I know nothing. I can't do this on my own. Help me. It was through that process. That I was shown that, yeah, there is something greater here that you can that's here to ask, to give you help, and you ask for it. When you really ask for it with so much of emotion and passion and, you know, total love in your heart, and, you know, I cry. I cry when I really need help. I really cry. I open my heart. Father, I can't do this. So my journey was towards faith was self-discovery. It is so for everyone. Everyone discovers faith on their own. It is not something you can read from. Yeah, but when you read from your book, there is a message there and you can, you know, your consciousness is raised. But ultimately, it is something you discover on your own through your darkest days. It doesn't have to be that way. So if your lifetime is that is a simple one, then you can easily discover that. But mine was pretty complicated because this is what I believe to be my last one. So I'm doing a lot of cleanup. So for me, it was through my deepest, darkest days. And one of the things that...
You see this as being your last cycle?
Yes. Oh, I'm done, Rusty.
Oh, good.
You know, I'm done. And you know what, when I look outside in America, I just observe it gives me tremendous sadness. We have about 900,000 cases of abuse, where children are abused, whether physically or sexually, per year. And we have close to 6.8 million cases of adults who get into criminal charges with FBI. So, you know, when I look at all that, we are such a wonderful country here. This is such a powerful country, and where is it we are going wrong? I feel, my feeling is faith is not there. It's not. They just don't have faith in themselves. They don't have faith in another power, in a bigger power outside that can take care of them. And I can understand when you're living in poverty or when you're abused. Like I can see 30 years of my life, I had no reason to believe God existed. But for me, in hindsight, I understand that was my karma. I see my past lifetimes. I understand why that happened. That was my completion. I'm done with. But what we need somewhere, we all need to find that hope. And hope is not, find that hope in God and faith. And it doesn't come day one. You just will it. You just, okay, I'm open. Set the intention. Father, I'm ready. I don't know if you exist. I don't know even if you're listening to me. But, you know, show me that you exist. Show me that, you know, I'm taking care of. One sign. Keep asking for that throughout. Doesn't matter how many times. That's how I started. Show me one sign. One sign in a week's time. Show me and give me a sign. I kept asking for that sign. And there are many people within the country, wonderful, wonderful humanitarians who are helping people have more faith in God. One is healfromprayer.org. It's run by this beautiful lady, Carly Heinius. She's doing this for free. She just takes anybody's prayer all over the country, and she has a large group of people who pray along with her every day, and they just pray. We've seen cancer being healed. We've seen people having making peace with their family members. We've seen people having the financial abundance they need, getting the job. But she's doing that. So here is one option. Let someone pray for you. Through healfromprayer.org, let someone pray. And through that, maybe you can discover faith. And another option is GodHearsUs.com. That is still in the works. GodHearsUs.com is something the founder wants to build centers all over United States to help teenagers and adults in some way, give them free education, free counseling, educate the predators, the pedophiles, educate them. Education. Teenagers need to know that they can go there and get help for free without any kind of peer pressure. Give more education, give resources to them. So GodHearsUs.com is a way that is coming up. It's not yet ready, but the founder is looking for a visionary to help with funds to go all over the country so they can build these huge centers and have help for people who need it. So there are so many ways. You start with yourself. Give me faith, Father. Show me that you exist. Then you try using Heal from Prayer. Let them pray for you and see what happens to your life. Use all these methods, GodHearsUs.com, to find your way.
But like you said, I mean, you come from corporate America, and that's part of the challenge that we have. I know this weekend, for example, I've been sitting there struggling with my own. I work in schools, and I do some work with elementary school kids, and I've been trying to put together the presentation. And there's so much about, you know, you got to get it done. You've got to do this. You've got to do that. There's so much about personal, you know, taking responsibilities, whether it's 401k and planning for your future. And there's this unbelievable push for you to be responsible for your life that it's almost pushed out that idea of faith that you're talking about, that there is somebody else out there that we can kind of let go of the wheel and let somebody else take it for a while. You know, that's counter to what, you know, the majority of people have been taught, and it's really, it is sad. I think you're right. I think materialism, I think part of what you're talking about, I can't believe that there's California hikers out there that wouldn't have given you water. I mean, that just blows me away. I'm a hiker and a lifelong dog lover and hiker, and I can't imagine there's too many people out there like that. But the idea that people it's almost as if, you know, we've been told that unless you're constantly in control, and of course I work in domestic violence and child endangerment too, and we talk to the victims that you're talking about. They do go to classes a lot of times. Also, sexual predators, they're required to go to 3 years of classes. But the domestic violence people, it's 52 weeks. And we talk about power and control, power and control, power and control. Those are the issues associated, and it's exactly what you're talking about. That's what you need to let go of in order to start down the path. But how do people let go of that fear, especially in our area, Northern California, where it's so much about even being able to afford to live here, which is a luxury. How do people, I mean, it's just to get them to let go. I know you work with clients. How do you get them to take that first step? I mean, they may call or they may try something, But is that really the basic first step, is just to do something?
Fear. All of us have fear, Rusty.
Right.
I have. Everybody has. You all have it in various degrees. Hmm? The more fear you have, the more controlling you get. When you see in corporate, when the leaders, sometimes they lose focus and they forget about the people and they're more worried about the deadline, it is fear.
Hmm? Right.
They forgot somewhere, something that is motivating them might be, one of the things might be that they want to look good, they want to succeed, and someone not meeting a deadline could mean that they failed. Because I experienced that. I didn't come to this place in my life right now here just falling from the lap of the divine. I had my stuff. I had my fear, my arrogance. I was the lead in Hewlett Packard. I was responsible for a team of developers. I was a perfectionist. I had a lot of good name in the company among my managers, and I later realized when I got into my spiritual path that I pushed my team members to meet deadlines, being insensitive to their mistakes. The software developers make bugs. They have software errors, and that's part of the process. I had zero tolerance for that. I had all kinds of good reasons for that. You know, HP depends on us, da-da-da-da-da. But ultimately, it is same. I was scared. I didn't want my managers to think that I didn't do something that I thought I just didn't do good in their eyes. I just wanted to look good. So I had to work at my fear first. I wanted everybody to like me. I would always give people gifts. And then my teacher taught me a technique. You can't do this without some kind of a technique. It is not a concept. You can't just do a mindless mantra and get rid of all your fears. I got rid of my addictions to chocolate. I had to have chocolate every day. There are many addictions. Well, the main one is chocolate. Second, I was needy. I needed people to like me. I got that to work for me. Through this technique, I let go of my neediness. Then I let go of my unhealthy eating habits. I let go of my arrogance. Rusty, my arrogance. I was queen of arrogance. I just, for me, my personal life as a child growing up was horrible. So all that I held on was my computer engineer degree and the way I worked in corporate. I worked very well. God gave me that gift so that I can make the money and be independent from all that. But along the way, I had arrogance. Is arrogance fear? Yes. Why do you always want to act like you know more than the other person? It's like, for me, each one has their story. My story was, I didn't want to be a nobody because I knew what being nothing was growing up. So I put on this false persona of Maya, the lead, Maya, the project manager, Maya, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And even when I stepped into the spiritual path, oh, Maya, the spiritual person, I know more about spirituality than you do. So I worked very hard at arrogance. And in the technique that my teacher uses is, first start changing yourself before the world, your reality can change. Look at yourself. And there are ways a session with me or a session with my teacher will help gently see through that. We'll see where are you stuck, where are the blocks. And then there is a way you write your unconscious mind and understand the reasons behind it. For me, when I wrote to my unconscious mind and asked it, why are you needy of people's acceptance of you? Why can't you let them not like you or not like your idea? Why are you dependent? Why do you feel rejected when somebody says no to your idea? I asked this question. It's like the conscious mind there's a technique there. It's pretty long to explain on the phone, but there's a way you can talk and make the unconscious write back to you. So when the unconscious wrote to me about my neediness, it had the most amazing thing to say. Why is it that you need this acceptance? And it said, you know what? I never had that love growing up. I never had that love. I'm so empty, and that's the reason it goes this way. Second thing is, why can't you stand up for yourself and, you know, speak your truth instead of going with everybody and pretending like this is what you want? The answer my unconscious mindset gave me was, when it stood up in the past, as a child, when I stood up, there was physical abuse. It was beating. That's the way it was dealt with. So it still held that in its memory. you know, I'm in my mid-30s, and it still held that in its memory. So that's one reason why it would never stand up and do that. So when I, in my last corporate job, I had an opportunity. I went as a contractor to this beautiful internet company, in search engine company, and I was given a job that I knew I was on a purpose. That's the first time I started taking my power. This is how you make change in corporate. People were overworked. Managers were abusing their power. A vice president was completely abusing his power. I saw all that, and I decided that for the first time in my life, in 10 years in this country, I wanted to do something that was not protecting my job, but, you know, something higher moved in me. And it was, I was ready for that because of the work I had done, the spiritual work I had done with seeing my own fears and opening my heart further so that, you know, I could have compassion for myself and my stuff that I'm carrying. So I decided to do something. So I wrote a note to the directors and told them exactly, here are the projects which have failed in my experience, and here are the case studies why people are overworked and this company is not putting projects ahead of people, and here are the reasons exactly why. I gave good case study points, and I told them exactly how the vice president was abusing his power. And I wrote this beautiful letter without any it was just very to the point, nothing emotional there, very clear. And I told them I wanted a meeting with them within a few days. Here I am, a contractor. Contractors are not treated equally in companies. And I decided that I was going to do it. But after writing that letter, Rusty, the next day I was petrified. I was scared. Mm-hmm. That was when Maya, the human being, the first one, writing the letter was easy. The soul took over. There are moments in your life when your higher self takes over and does the deed and is done with it. And then Maya, the person, was scared. I need this job. I'm a single mother. I need to pay my rent. What did you do? I'm sure that action was wrong. And through this technique my teacher taught me, I was able to understand all the fear I had. I had to go through many lifetimes. I'm at a point where I could see how things are happening for me. So I understood how I had to go to my childhood where I was physically abused when I stood up for something that is true. I had to make peace with it. And still there was fear before I could meet the directors. And then I had to make peace with what was the reflection I'm getting from this vice president who's abusing his power. Why am I furious? I had to own my disowned self because I have abused my power as a leader. Pushing your developers to meet a deadline because your leaders told you when they are clearly not able to do it, that is abusing my power. It's my job as a leader to stand up and say no. You know, and so I had to have compassion for my stuff before I went to that meeting. Without that, I would be coming from a place of anger and not from a place of acceptance. Yeah. So when the meeting happened, I went to the director and told her, you know what, I mean no harm. I'm speaking my truth here. And I shared my experiences of abusing the power and how people suffer. And I gave examples of all the projects that failed there. And they couldn't avoid it because I was coming from a place of, I'm not blaming you. I'm sharing all the places that I as a human being has had fear, and I have done all this, and I can understand where you are, but this is not okay. Because I've suffered, people are suffering, do something. You have the power to change it. So that conversation was, God gave me that gift. That was the first time, that was a revelation for me, Rusty, that I could go to a place of total risk and come from a place of love. I learned so much that day in that experience, and I'm hoping I never forget that. And at the end of the conversation, the manager said, you know what, we need more awareness, we have more projects than people. For me, that day, I knew, something in me I knew, when you go from a place of love and fearlessness doesn't mean that you don't have anything. You just walk through it. I hold my Archangel Michael. Michael, be with me. I need you right now. Help. And call the Creator and just walk ahead through your fear. And before you, and that's it. Walk through it. Everything is like that for me in my life. Everything. Starting talking on the radio was fear. I had a lot of fear. I'm from India. English is not my first language. So when I started all my radio and television interviews, was I scared? Yes. I had all kinds of issues. And through this technique my teacher taught me, which is also in the book, The Power of Illusion, I just did that. It's a method that works. I wouldn't be where I am today, completely owning my reality that I create by myself. When, if you can come to a place in life where you own, you create your reality. If you have a limiting thought, you will attract limiting circumstances. If you think you're not lovable, you will attract people who confirm that for you. So when you change the thought, your reality changes. That's a learning I got, and that's a learning I'm sharing.
When we talked, when I was looking at your website, you talked about judgments, and you mentioned how when we judge other people, that it's something about ourselves that we're looking at, and I'm trying to find the exact thing. It was on your website, and I was trying to find that exact quote, and I can't seem to find it, but it was something to the effect that what we notice in other people are things that we've noticed in our own disowned self that's within us. And you seem to be, when you're able to come from a place where you're not judging, you're not giving, you know, your opinion or your judgment of what right versus wrong, but what you're trying to do is lay out an effective, I would imagine that, at least in my mind, that's the definition of conscious communication. What is the disowned self that you, well, I mean, before I ask that question, one of the questions that keeps coming to my mind, and this is something that happens, and I get such a wonderful opportunity to speak to people like you who have been on a journey and so forth, and your book is even called The Power of Illusion. I don't understand a lot of times the religious traditions talk to us about the fact that this world is an illusion, that this place,
right.
Why did it start, why are we here, why, you know, it's almost as if at some level, of course I was raised Catholic and we always think we're guilty of everything, but why did we get sent here? What is the, you know, what is it that we were sent to this place of illusion and that we had to overcome this limiting place and that what we're trying to achieve is a break from this? And how did this whole cycle get started? Do you have a sense of that?
Yes, I can share with you my experience of that. And
okay.
There's more I need to learn because I'm still a student until I master Earth's reality. So let me share my experience. For me, I'm here to master all my lessons, experience everything, good and bad. There's no judgment, okay? And somewhere along the way, choose light. That is, just for the, there is so much joy in all in this whole journey of many lifetimes, many wonderful experiences, not so great experiences. For me, it is just evolving more and more and more and come close to the light. Life is full of constant learning. Everybody learns. Everybody in different planes learn. My teacher is from a different plane. She's Goddess Maya. And she comes into the body of this beautiful lady and she teaches us. So when I first met Maya, I didn't believe in all that stuff, but I had my own direct experience when I saw her, and I knew, oh yeah, I remember you. That is when I remember past lifetimes. So that's how, through her teaching, I learned how everything is just this experiencing different experiences, and then to going back to the light. You play with the darkness, you play with the light, and you choose and you go. And there's a lot of joy in the process too, but somehow right now we've forgotten that part. So the way illusion comes into play is, illusion, the way that I see it is, it's truly not what you think it is. That's how I see it. For example, let's just apply it to our day-to-day lives. Sometimes spiritual people think that they will not go to corporate America and work because that is too materialistic and they only would do spiritual jobs. I was one of them for some time. And the illusion there could be that the fear of being in the real world and facing the people there and dealing with the reflections you're getting from them. That is one illusion. Another illusion is, I'm always helpful. I like to help people and give them money, you know. So when an outsider was looking at me, would think, oh, Maya, she's so helpful. She's always there to help me. But for me, my illusion was that I saw later, the veil that covered the truth was, I wanted to be helpful so that people will like me. They would think, oh, Maya's so good. She's so spiritual. And for me, it's just neediness. Ultimately, it's some form of neediness, one needing acceptance. So that's the illusion. So there is, the whale is there in every single action. Every single action there is a whale. The interesting part, you will come to a point where you're no longer judging yourself for every time you trip down and fall down. In the beginning, when you start seeing your shadows, or when you start, when you're looking at someone and you're thinking, oh my gosh, how arrogant. The presidential campaign, that had me in quite a tizzy for a while. I would look at all the candidates, and I would have all kinds of judgments about everybody, the vice presidents, the president. Oh, you're lying. You're arrogant. You can't see women in power. And then my teacher sent in a good note. She said, all of you start working on yourself and see what are they reflecting. And I started writing my stuff. None of them haven't caused me any problems any longer. But I had to work at it. My manager in the company, one of the companies I worked for, he was extremely rude and insensitive. And I didn't understand. I was angry at him for being who he is until epiphany struck, and I was told, you know what? Look and said, what is he reflecting you? And I grudgingly complained, and in a few days' time, I wrote all about it. When I wrote about it, when he was being who he is, obnoxious, I did not have judgment. I could understand where he came from. Because I did my homework. That is illusion. Illusion is understanding your reflections, and when you own it and release it, your reality changes. How did my reality change? I'm no longer hooked on to my manager acting in an obnoxious way. Was I upset every day? I used to cry to work because I had to face him that day and all the unfair treatment he would give to others. But when I worked on myself at all the instances, I wrote and wrote and I got the answers from my unconscious mind, how much I had done the same, and I released it, my reality changed. He didn't affect me after that. And ironically, another manager came to my life immediately. That is illusion. That's the way it works. And another way you can see illusion, I'm just giving you all the practical ways. Another way, you want to manifest something. For example, I always wanted to manifest $100,000. I don't know, I didn't want to earn that money, not go through the regular job. I just wanted lump sum of money, $100,000, so I can just do my spiritual work for a little bit longer. And I just didn't want to do the corporate thing. So I put this check on the wall, and my teacher would always say, you know, in illusion, in order to have what you want, all fears must come out. Simple. So I looked at that check, and every day I would say, thank you, Father, this is mine. Thank you, Father, for this. This is mine. Thank you, Father, for this. And if there's any fear that comes up every other day or, you know, in a few days, I would just write it out. Why can't I have this money in my life? And all kinds of reasons would be there. You're going to spend it. You're not worthy of this money. You don't have the skill sets for this money to drop into your lap. All that stuff. And one day I was cleaning up my home, I saw this document sitting in my house. I've seen this document for many years, but I didn't bother with it. And I called this number. It was this financial institution. I knew I had some shares long time back, and I had sold it to. And I called them and said, you know, I have this document. I just want to make sure that I understand what this is all about. And they said, you know what? Your shares that you invested, I don't know, 7 years back, is now 104K. You know, I never thought God will hear me that way. I always thought that kind of big stories happen to, you know, other people. But that is also the illusion, the way, like, I was able to create my reality by my belief system, by my prayers, by my writing, by my releasing my fears. That's the main thing. In illusion, you need to release your fears. The only reason we don't have the love we want, or the body we want, or the job, or the house we want, is understand what's the fear behind it. And once you understand the fear, and then you're ready to act on it, opportunities will come your way. And it may not be what you wanted, but take it on. I didn't think that my life would take in the spiritual path. I knew that, you know, that was part of my life. But all of a sudden, that happened. Opportunities started coming. So that illusion, there is a whale that is there that prevents you from seeing the truth. And it is also the silent thread that connects everything, where you can change it. You can change your reality. For me, I was always plump. I wanted to lose weight. So I cut out a body of this beautiful young woman and put my photo of my face on top of it. And every day I looked at it and said, this is mine. Thank you, Father. Within a few months, weight started falling off. It's like something in my mind got it. It's simple. In your unconscious mind, the more you see it, the more it becomes a reality. That's
well, when you talk about the unconscious mind, again, from my perspective, we always look at the thought processes, because a lot of what you're talking about is the negative self-talk. And for most of us, we're not really aware of the fact that we sabotage ourselves on a daily basis. And a lot of that comes from the subconscious mind. A lot of the techniques that you're talking about, whether it's writing to your shadow self or some of these other techniques that you've worked with your teachers, is that really an effort to try and bring that subconscious that subconscious sabotaging voice to more of a real kind of a thing, so you can have that dialogue?
Yes. So what we are doing is, you have the conscious and the unconscious, right? We are trying to bridge the gap. We are trying to have a connection and understand the unconscious. If not, your conscious actions will be guided by the unconscious. You will not know it. That's how sabotaging takes place. You want to lose 5 pounds. You come close to 3 pounds and you eat a chocolate cake. That is sabotaging. So what this whole exercise is, making a conscious connection with your unconscious mind, telling it, you know what, I'm the one in charge. The conscious mind is in charge. And let me understand what your fears are. Talk to me. And I will reparent it and re-educate it. Simple. That's
reparenting and re-education. I call it the thermostat. You know, a lot of my guys that I work with, you know, they'll go through 50 weeks of almost perfect attendance in their classes, and then they'll sabotage in the last week or something like that. And I think it's like a thermostat inside of them. They almost have they've set the temperature of what they're capable of doing. And when they get a little bit, start to be successful, and they start to move in the right direction, they sure as heck will find a way to to get back down to the temperature that they're comfortable with. And I think so much of what you're talking about, In my work, obviously, when we're working with in parole and probation and guys coming out of prison and so forth, the spiritual aspect of it has to be a little bit more neutral. But what you're really trying to do is get them to think differently. You know, I mean, so much of it is, man, you're thinking your way into this. You really need to understand that most of what you're doing this to yourself. It's not external. It's not somebody outside of yourself.
Right, and when you talk to your unconscious mind, there is a reason why that existed in the first place, Rusty. Like, if we not only bring beliefs from this lifetime, we bring it from past.
Right.
When I had to do this thing to my managers and write that note, one of the things that I was in a place where I could see it, the vision came. It was like, I remember standing up for my truth in another lifetime and being a woman, and I lost my life. And I remember that came up, you know, it was ready to be seen, so it came up. So we carry things from past lifetimes, and we recreated over and over again until we have completed that lesson. I know so many lessons I've been carrying on for lifetimes, and I'm so glad this is the last one. I'm done with it. So, you know, it's like understanding the reasons behind it. What is the fear behind this, dear one? I talk to it lovingly. I always talk to it lovingly. You know, what is the fear behind it? Talk to me. And you will never know the fear until it talks back to you. Earlier, when my teacher started talking about this technique, I refused to do the work. I was like too sure, oh, yeah, I know what he's talking. I have an idea of what's happening, and I refused to do it. But when I really, it came to a point where, you know, I had to do it, and when I started, I was stunned. The things that came out totally stunned me. You just don't think about it. And you will know it is true because something inside will tell you, and then you reparent it. For me, I didn't know why I was sabotaging this diet thing. And then I realized when I wrote about it, I was raised in India. Women were not, I didn't have permission, this is not for everybody, it's just for me. I was not raised in a family where my sexuality was allowed to be embraced. I was asked to cover it and pretend it didn't exist, that cover my beauty when I walk on the road, no one should see you, that kind of stuff. And walking on the road was not safe when I was growing up, it was not safe for a woman because there was a lot of Eve teasing, and men could just, you know, going on the public transportation was really difficult for me growing up. That was my learning in the lifetime. That is what I created. Everybody doesn't have to do that. So for me, losing weight meant being open to all that again. here I am in the United States, making my own life. I'm completely independent, take care of myself, having a great life. And I'm still letting those memories of a teenage girl, I didn't know that until I wrote that. I knew it happened, and I know there's sad feelings about it in the past, but until I wrote about it, then I had to re-educate it. You know what? We are completely in our part, and no one is going to mess with us again. We are not the person we were then. Look at our life. Look what we have accomplished. So then it let go of that.
Well, I love your idea. You know, the one thing that you said that has really struck me is the idea that these are supposed to be playful. You know, that there's supposed to be some playful going into the light and going into the dark. And there seems to be a seriousness that's taken over, especially in this country. And maybe it's part as we just passed the anniversary of 9/11 or something like that. There was some vulnerability associated with people being able to attack something that we consider to be unattackable or whatever it happens to be. But there seems to be a seriousness that I don't find very attractive. And I think in my work in education, one of the things that I noticed about children is I don't think children are really buying into it. I mean, a lot of kids, they can't tell you why, but they know that the adults don't seem to be having a lot of fun. And they're rejecting it. And so, you know, I really hope, you know, and through shows like this and through the work that you're doing and some of the websites that you mentioned and so forth,
right,
that we can bring some of the joy back to the journey, because people are scared. I mean, they're acting,
you know,
as if it's me against the world, and they're, you know, there just isn't a lot of joy out there.
You know, yes. The good thing going is the children, I find the kids, children right now being very aware. They're not as confused as, at least as I was when growing up. My teenage boy, son, he's extremely aware. Extremely aware. Great wisdom. Ask him a question, he comes from a place of solid wisdom. There is no temper tantrum, nothing. Simple wisdom. Great love. You know, the heart is just bursting with love. And I'm glad the kids are not buying into it. What I'm scared of, Rusty, is kids do need parents' guidance at some time, as
yes,
growing up until they, parents can undo that. They have, one of my, the reason I got into the path was I didn't want to mess up my son's development. I knew when he was 4 years old that I was messed up and I was going to mess up his life. That's when I started the path. So I'm scared that the parents will do something not recognize the children, what the gift they bring, or not honor them, or try to mold them to being who they are. You need to do this. This is the only way of existence. It's all one way, because the parents haven't given themselves the permission to be wrong, to be open to making mistakes. That's how communication is. Being able to be teachable by everybody, being able to be teachable by your kids, and knowing that you can be wrong. So that's why centers like GodHearsUs.com anything that's coming up, there are others too. I'm very happy about these internet-based organizations that's coming up, because so much, I don't think the government can do this. They can to some degree, but
no, they
do have serious problems right now with energy and all that stuff happening. With unemployment and energy, they have to pay attention to so many real issues right now. I think individuals have to take control of this. People who have resources, who have something to put away with, who are ready to share it. Do something. Start an organization. Get a spiritual center. Have this foundation so that the children can fall back. There are times when my son needs me. Though he's so grounded, there are times when I have to make sure that I am there for him in truth. And I'm not taking out my stuff on him. If I have a bad day, don't take it out on him. Don't take it out on, it messes, if you do it regularly, and the TV they watch, it can really do some damage. Let the parents, start with the parents, educate them. Let them know it's okay that we all made mistakes. Because what are mistakes? Just a way for us to know that, oh, that way didn't work. Let's try another way. But in our society, one way not working is a big taboo. You made a mistake, then you're no good. You're like you fell from grace. It's like a big sin. No, mistakes are the way we grow. Challenges are the way we expand ourselves and grow and learn more. If you do the same old thing because you're scared to take a risk, you will be in the same old place next year and the year after.
But you also run the risk of allowing your child to parent themselves at some level, and that's part of the problem that we have is the other side of the equation, is there some parents are, you know, the old tabula rasa idea of early, Piaget that had talked about the idea that these kids were the difference between a tabula rasa, which is basically a blank slate, or that kids come out fully developed, and what we're supposed to do is just nurture that talent and allow them to develop within it, and then you find the kid running around the restaurant knocking everybody's plates off the table, and the parents sitting there saying, that's just him.
That's not that. That is poor boundaries. That means no discipline.
What you're talking about takes effort.
No.
It takes work.
It takes work.
Commitment.
It takes work.
And people, those are dirty words you're talking about.
So, the thing is, children learn from parents. If the parent has complete disrespect when they're dealing with the partner in their life, or with children and the child will get that way of communicating. I learned my ways of communication from my parents.
Absolutely.
If things don't go your way, scream your head off. I carry that in my marriage too. So children, because they're just sponges at that point, they bring their awareness. And it helps that parents do their homework on their spiritual side so that while they are learning, the children are learning. Because my son told me the other day, he's 13 years old, Mom, you're my spiritual teacher, Mom. I never talked about this to him. I learn everything from you. And he goes and does his computer game and all that stuff. But that stunned me because every time I learn something, my mistakes, I'll tell him, you know what, Ram, I made this mistake, you know, and I came from this place. I always own my mistake. Every time I step, fall down, and I take it out on him, I yell at him, and I'm not there to give him the love he needs because I'm too busy moping about my life, I take time to apologize. And when my boundaries got stronger, his boundaries were getting stronger too. And of course, there are rules here, but the rules are coming from, children sense when the parents are coming from a secure, a grounded place of emotional well-being. Children sense that. Kids do. I'm not saying everybody. Most children do. And they tap on it. They tap on it, and they grow. They're here to learn from us. They're here to bring their gifts, and they are here to learn their own individual lessons.
Yeah, well, boundaries are key. I mean, I think, so much of what we talk about is the ability to set and keep effective boundaries in your life. And then a kid knows. I mean, if you're serious and you're working your program and you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, the kids are going to follow suit. But, so many parents, they parent either they're too strict. They'll say, you're grounded for the next 4 years. And then, of course, they can't live up to that expectation, which shows the kids that punishment isn't real. Or they parent with money. They try and attempt to get the kid to be compliant based on if you do this, then I'll do that, or I'll buy you this, or I'll get you a video game. And so much of it has to do with that consistency and the boundaries and being able to speak exactly, the truth that's real for you. And then obviously the kid is gonna follow suit.
And Rusty, one thing I noticed with children, I learned this with my son. If when there is love, the kind of love that is all accepting. I don't want my son to be all A grades. I don't want him to be all A's. I want him to do his best. Sit back and do nothing. That's the way I love you. I want to try your best, but I don't want you to be all A's. I'm not looking for that. The kind of love, when he makes a mistake, it's okay, a beautiful love that is, when there is that love in every communication, love is what makes the parent say, I'm sorry, I messed up. That love. I'm talking about that love too. I'm sorry, yep. I didn't do the right thing for you. That is because I'm a human being and I'm struggling here. Just give me some time. I'll be okay. When you have that love, Rusty, no matter what happens, they grow up strong. I see my son. He is strong. I didn't have that growing up. That's why I was looking outside of myself for someone to fill that in. Take care of me, take care of me, take care of me. I didn't have any boundaries. And he has great boundaries. Yes, fantastic boundaries, and I learned that from him.
I hate to stop the conversation, but we have run out of time, and I want to give you, we got about 20 seconds left, and I just wanted to If people want to get in touch with you, can you let them know how they can do that?
Yes, they can give me a call at 408-927-9445. They can also visit my website, powerofillusion.com. So these are the two ways they can do that.
I really appreciate your passion. What an amazing hour that we've spent together. And, you know, I hope in the future I will continue to follow what you're up to, and hopefully maybe our paths will cross at some point. But thank you so much for sharing your time and your obvious devotion to your path. It's really been a joy to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Rusty. I'm so grateful for this opportunity. Thank you so much.
Have a great night. For all of you out there listening, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. Next week, Sonia Bennett, who I think also has a radio show here on BBC. It's on Radio 1 at 9 a.m., will be joining us. And until then, remember, the rest is still unwritten. So as Maya told us tonight, you have the opportunity to change it. If you don't like the way it's working, change it. Change the way you're thinking. Thank you so much. Peace out to everybody. Thank you, Don.
Come to the end of another hour here at the Conscious Communicator, and I can't thank you enough for joining me on this journey. Your phone calls and emails are greatly appreciated, and if you like what we're doing, please invite a friend to join us. This is a conversation that needs many voices, and as we open up the possibility of conscious communication to more and more people, the results will be a freeing of the true self from the burdensome armor of ego, and a flowering of the potential that is available to all of us. Until next time, peace out, travelers. The rest is still unwritten.